And a good Friday, October morning to you. And yes, welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe along for the ride for the next 4 hours. We got a lot of things to get into today, a lot of ground to cover, and we're going to have fun doing it. Ian, so far, manning things at the game studios. Good to see him with us.
I asked him if he went home. You worked with him last night, Darren, and then here he is this morning, and he's got the afternoon. I mean, he is working hard.
He told me last night. Said, "I'll see you at 10 o'clock," and I'm like, "Oh, you're doing the double dip." He's like, "Yep." So yeah,
in the trenches.
Ian is the man in the trenches.
Got to grind.
Ian is the MVP of 102.5 The Game.
But what about his workload? Nobody's talking about Ian's workload. You know, I mean, think about it.
I'm not built like Derrick Henry.
Well, he's so.
Don't you think that's a lot? I mean, when do we get concerned? What's that number?
Well, he's
of
not
hours
practice.
Where we get concerned about Ian's workload.
Ian's not going to practice. We're going to hold him out of practice because he's got to play tomorrow. He's got to work preds, but Sunday he's not going to practice. Monday, he's going to come out for a walkthrough and basically just listen to Jared talk for a few minutes. So I mean, that's really all he has to do.
So Monday does kind of feel like a walkthrough.
Yeah, I mean, Monday's easy for him.
As long as they win.
It doesn't even matter if they win. If they win, Jared's going to find something wrong and something to complain about.
I like that attitude, though. You recharge when Jared's talking. There's opportunities there.
Yeah.
Monday's definitely got to feel like a Saturday before a game for Ian, right?
Ian just sits back and is like, all right, whatever. Caroline does the same thing. Like, they're just,
as long as the collars are nice.
You don't need anybody else on a Monday.
Well, Ian, welcome aboard. Good to have you with
Thank
us
you
here
very much.
Today. While we were doing, the two of us were doing the Predators game last night that we'll get to in just a bit. The Jags almost got their first win. You know what? That was a fun game. At least the second half was a whole lot of fun last night. I did see a lot of people on social media talking about this person who bet, what was it, Chase, 200 and something thousand on the Bengals to win the game. Money line bet. Of course, they're down 14-0 at the half. By the way, $42,000 to win $72,000. Like, I'm not a math professor.
That's dumb.
Like, that's not smart money. Like, you're risking. That risk is not that worth that reward, in my opinion. 242 to win 72? No. Like, that's no. Like, those odds are not good. Like, I think most people would tell you, no, that doesn't make sense. That's a bad bet unless you win. Then you just made $72,000, but which that person did.
Well,
I'll tell you what, they were sweating.
Well, so this is what I did. I had a teaser that I teased the over down to 40.5, and I teased the line for the Bengals to -1.5. So that obviously hit, but at just before the half, I'm like, you know what? I don't trust Jacksonville. They may be up 14, but I don't trust Jacksonville. They're gonna screw this up. And so I jumped on Bengals money line +400, and that worked out.
I was looking this morning on Facebook, and someone that I'm friends with on Facebook, Barry Holtkamp, posted his winning parlay from last night. Listen to this. Joe Mixon, anytime touchdown. James Robinson, anytime touchdown. Trevor Lawrence, anytime touchdown. Over 224.5 yards passing for Joe Burrow. Over 199.5 yards passing for Trevor Lawrence. Over 54.5. He put $18.80 on that parlay. He won $864.80. Not bad. Not bad.
That could tide you over for a little bit.
Yeah. So that'd give you some play money.
Nice.
Almost a grand off a $20 wager. Not bad.
It was a good game, and the Jaguars looked like a football team. They even, after it looked like they were just going to unravel, fought back and were there to the very end. So now the Titans, now that they lost, have a unique opportunity of playing two winless teams in back-to-back weeks. But I think you have to look at the Jaguars saying, okay, looks like they might be figuring a few things out. Because they were inches from 21-0.
They totally blew it. Yes.
Yeah. They missed a big opportunity on a goal line stand, fourth and one, to be up 21-0 going into the half.
And that's probably the game. Realistically, that's probably the game. I don't think Cincinnati's coming back. That, to me, would have been the dagger, but didn't happen. Didn't happen.
It just shows you in the NFL that it's you're not that far. You're never that much better or worse than your competition. That's the whole theme of this game, and probably we'll be talking about this next week, too, in terms of the Titans. You're playing teams that you, on paper, should beat, need to beat, especially knowing how difficult your schedule is, but you have to play well. And you can't have this attitude of, well, you know, just come in there with the backups and, you know, we can rest this guy. It's hard to do that and have that right. You have to have the right mentality. You have to play well. How many times has Mike Vrabel said, he says it all the time, I don't care how good you are or how bad the other team is. If you don't play well, you lose in this league.
I mean, that, yeah.
He says, if he said it once, he said it a million times. I guarantee you he says it again today somewhere in there. You'll hear that as a theme. And the Jets are, I think the Jets are very much like the Jaguars going into last night. It's like everybody's ticked off. They want to see results. They haven't had anything good in a long, long time. I don't think you're going to see a team that goes out and quits. I think you're going to see a very determined Jets team, as young and inexperienced and as flawed as they are. I think you're going to see an inspired effort, and it's going to be up to the Titans to just be better.
Well, I trust, as you both know, I trust Trevor Lawrence's career path more than I do Zach Wilson. I'm not saying Zach Wilson's going to be a bust or not going to work out, but I trust Trevor Lawrence is just going to get – in fact, I had that thought last night during the game. I was like, you know what? We keep talking about the Titans window is now, and it is now, and I get it. It'll be easy for people to be like, oh, it's the Jags. The Jags will always be the Jags. Well, I mean, maybe so. But, you know, they have been good in the past. It's not like the Jags have always been horrible. If Trevor Lawrence is as good as I think he's going to be, which, as I was saying 2 years ago, the Titans need to tank to get him, that this guy is a surefire number one pick overall, I mean, their window will get – it will start closing once Trevor Lawrence figures it out, because I do think he's going to be a franchise quarterback and a great quarterback in this league. I do. Which means he's going to be in the Titans division. So it's not going to be this year. I don't think it's going to be next year. But you're going to see this steady growth from Trevor Lawrence. The good news for Titans fans is Jacksonville has had a, you know, they haven't made smart decisions. So what you can hope for is while they may have gotten a right at quarterback, which to me doesn't take degrees on the wall or 40 years in the league to figure out Trevor Lawrence should be the number one pick in the draft, but they mess up a lot of other things. Like, they're going to need more help. He's going to need other things to go right for Jacksonville for them to put it all together and, you know, be a good team. But right now, I mean, I did have that thought last night. Like, they better take advantage of this time now, because there may be a time, let's say 2 years from now, where Trevor Lawrence is pretty darn good and Jacksonville is pretty darn good.
I think the other thing to remember is you see the talent. Even though a guy as talented as Trevor Lawrence can struggle the way he did, if you give him a little chance and a little confidence, you see some of the throws he can make. And the same is true of Zach Wilson. When he has time, you can probably put together a package of plays, even these 3 weeks where they've been awful, where you see a throw he makes and you say, wow, the guy has got a great arm. He can move a little bit. He's got so that skill set, the tools are there. So it is up to the Titans to exploit the weaknesses while he's inexperienced and he doesn't have great talent around him. And they're scrambling up there. They've got a new offensive coordinator. They're trying desperately to get something around him, a foundation built so he can grow. And they've screwed it up so many times before. You can go right down the list of quarterbacks that have crashed and burned up there especially. But the guy, make no mistake about it, the guy has got an arm. And so if you give him a little window, I mean, he'll fire it in there. He's got the tools. You have to disrupt him like the first three teams have done. First three teams have pretty good defenses. This is what the Jets are looking at. They're saying, well, this Titans defense on paper is not as good as the three defenses they've played before. Maybe this is the week that the Jets offense can look better.
When we come back, we'll head to Cookeville. We'll check in with Tennessee Tech President. President Oldham will join us. Phil Oldham will be on the line. This will tell you quite an honor for him and the school. We'll talk about that and all things about the university and things that are going on in college athletics with him on the other side. But first, Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Loan Pronto.
Okay, let's tell you about Loan Pronto early in the show today. And so for those that like to listen at 10 o'clock, I'll give you the message that Loan Pronto has been driving home in the last several months. Remember, those interest rates are low right now. You're going into the fall. You've got the holidays coming up. Wouldn't it be nice to get your budget straight and save money with a big opportunity because the interest rates are so low? Yeah, absolutely. And here's the other thing. If you're in need of cash in these next few months, we know home values in our listening area are very, very good. You can take advantage of that with a home equity loan. Maybe you want to reinvest in your home. Maybe there's some bills you need to pay, some consolidation of debt, some credit card bills you want to even out on. Well, this is an opportunity for you financially. You don't want to pass up. Loan Pronto has the zero-cost refi. Either of those options are available for you, and the best part is they've streamlined this process. They've taken the paperwork out of it. It's all digital now, and they can get the deal done quickly, 14 days in a lot of cases, in most cases, and they pay the closing costs, no junk fees, no closing costs. Nobody else does that. So take advantage of what Loan Pronto has to offer. Go to loanpronto.com and find out about the zero-cost refi and look into this. If your mortgage rate starts with a 3, you absolutely need to give them a call because they can lower your house payment, and that's a really nice thing. Here's how you call them, 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. Or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender.
Thank you, Scott. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase on this gorgeous Friday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to the month of October. Darren McFarland, Willie Donnick, Chase McCabe with you. Our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, products curated for life. Let's head to Cookeville. Let's talk to their university president. Phil Oldham is on the line with us. He became their ninth president in school history back almost a decade ago, and now he's got quite the honor here lately being named to the NCAA Board of Governors, and he now joins us. President Oldham, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. You've been on the board of directors, I think, the last several years, but to kind of take this next step up and be a part of the NCAA Board of Governors, one, congratulations on it. What does that mean to you, and what exactly does that entail?
Well, first of all, thanks. And it is a great honor. NCAA, obviously, is the epitome of college sports. And for a big sports fan like myself, it's just a great opportunity to be at sort of the center of the universe for college sports, and it's a really interesting time, obviously challenging time for college sports with a lot of changes, a lot of social disruptors, and so you see that played out. But it's a great opportunity. Board of Governors oversees all three divisions of the NCAA. So Division One that most people think about, you know, the big conferences and you know, was SEC or ACC or Big 12. And then you've got everything in Division II and Division III as well. So a lot of the smaller schools, smaller programs, and very diverse. You know, I think there's over 500,000 student athletes any given year in the country. So it's a very big operation and a lot of challenges. But what a great experience for student athletes and the public at large.
We'll get to those challenges in just a moment, but you had your own challenges right there in your backyard over the last 18 months. I'm sure they didn't hand you a manual for a pandemic when you took over to be the president in 2012, but you've gone through it along with your students and your student body and your faculty over the last 18 months. How has that gone to this point? And, you know, what have you learned going through this experience?
Well, yes, it has been a challenge, and you're right. Nobody could prepare for this. you know, nobody has lived through this before, and so it was all unprecedented. And we had to learn a lot on the fly and work through a lot of tricky decisions, and there were just layers and layers, as you can imagine. But, you know, the bottom line is our faculty, staff, and particularly the students have just been outstanding. They've done everything we've asked of them. We've been able to successfully manage this in a way that we can continue to educate students predominantly in person on campus, and things continue to get back to pretty normal at this point in time. So and keep everybody healthy in the process. So it's been a challenge, but we've learned some really good lessons about how resilient we can be and how resourceful we can be at times. But also how, you know, what we really value, what's really important about a college education. And the students have been real clear with us throughout that they want to be on campus. They want in-person classes, instruction. They want to be with their peers. And that's great. That's, we believe that's what college is all about. And so we're finding new ways of making sure we can do that and still keep everybody safe.
You talked about being on the Board of Governors and overseeing, you know, all the athletics over divisions 1, 2, and 3, all the levels. And, you know, now there's NIL. That's name, image, and likeness. And these student athletes get an opportunity to, you know, cash in on their name and whatever they're doing. And every level is different, as you know. But what do you make of NIL and the challenges and really just – giving these kids an opportunity, because a lot of them had that opportunity but were denied the opportunity just simply because they played a sport?
Yeah, it's causing, I think, everyone within the NCAA and within college sports to do a lot of soul searching and a lot of reevaluation of what college sports values, what the values are at the core, and how to transform it in a way that is coherent with modern times. You know, how do you keep an amateur model of athletics, but still provide the appropriate flexibility and opportunity for student athletes to explore financial opportunities on their own? And so there's a lot to this. And I'll be honest, I think, To a large extent, we're building this airplane while we're flying it. So we're still learning these lessons to a great extent, and I think it'll continue to get better, and we'll find out how to manage this appropriately so that you can you maintain that that college experience and not professionalize college sports, but at the same time give these students, like any other student, the opportunities they should have to pursue their own private interests.
So, I believe
it is a challenge.
Yeah, no doubt. And I believe you're the second president from the OVC to be on this NCAA Board of Governors. I think Jacksonville State, their president was on it about a decade ago. But with that being said, the other layer to all this and all the shuffling that's going on with these conferences, we're seeing constant movement with conferences, and especially movement in your own conference, as Belmont just announced they're going to the Missouri Valley. Austin Peay just announced they are also out. Jacksonville State, we already know, in Eastern Kentucky already had moved out. How concerned are you right now with the conference you're affiliated with, the Ohio Valley Conference, with Tennessee Tech, and all this movement that's going on and all this shuffling that I don't think is slowing down anytime soon?
Yeah, I think, first of all, the Ohio Valley Conference is a great conference. It's been a stable, fantastic conference for decades, and I have no doubt that it will continue to be an outstanding conference in Division I NCAA. But, I mean, you can see this from, whether it's the SEC expanding and the Big 12 having some issues. It trickles down to the mid-majors as well, and you are seeing it in the OVC. I think the difficulty is that no one. There's so much uncertainty around this, and there's no stable ground, I think, for a lot of people to find. And I think everybody's looking for where is the new stability conference alignments. You know, the sort of the old model of aligning with partners in a tight geographic footprint is giving way to other types of alignments that may or may not be stable long term. And so I think that's where a lot of university presidents and athletic directors are struggling a little bit now. And so it's sort of a combination of looking for opportunities and trying to find stable places and stable partners to align yourselves with. I think that's the real challenge. I think the OVC is going to emerge from this really well. But all this it's probably going to take a while because you're right. I don't think this is going to settle down in the next few weeks. It's probably going to last a little while, being very unstable.
We're talking to Tennessee Tech President Phil Oldham. He has been selected to serve as one of the 25 members of the NCAA Board of Governors. And, of course, that oversees not just Division I that we talk about most, but Division II and Division III. And as you can hear, he's walking in, and there's a mountain of really important issues going forward in the NCAA. So, President Oldham, I'll hit you with another one. In just talking to a lot of coaches, I know everybody had do the right thing in mind when they allowed everybody to come back after the season, especially the kids in the spring sports who missed really their entire season a couple of years ago and gave them sort of a free year of eligibility. But in doing so, it's created sort of a logjam on a lot of rosters in a lot of different sports. And then you couple that with the ability to transfer without sitting out, and now it's created sort of that perfect storm where you got a lot of kids moving back and forth up from Division III to Division II, Division II to Division I, et cetera. And, of course, you got the transfer portal. Well, some kids get in there, and then they can't find a place to go. So how long do you think it'll take this to shake out, and what are your ideas to try to get this, you know, logjam cleared up?
Well, you're right. You assessed it, I think, pretty accurately. So the transfer issue was going to create some, at least short-term chaos, I think, in and of itself. And it's some positive, some negative in that regard. I think it basically puts coaches in the position where they have to continually recruit student athletes, not just the new ones. They've got to continue to recruit the ones they've already recruited and keep them. And so, you know, that gives the student athletes some options and some opportunities, but it creates some instability within college sports that, you know, things can change really quickly in a program, and that makes it harder to understand what's going on. You know, the COVID situation, as you said, did in a lot of ways make it worse. I think, in fairness to those student athletes that lost seasons, you know, to extend their eligibility, I still believe it was the right thing to do. But you're right, it's created a logjam of sorts with emerging student athletes coming out of high school. They're having a harder time finding scholarship opportunities because the rosters are already full. My guess in that sense, it's probably going to take another year or two for that to begin to clear out some. But some schools benefit from this and some schools suffer. So there's some natural winners and some natural losers to this. And I guess we'll see on the playing field how that turns out.
Tennessee Tech President Phil Oldham is with us. And so is all these things that we're talking about, and you include name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, all those things. If you look at in your crystal ball down the road, let's say 10 years from now, what do you think the state of college athletics is, especially from the viewpoint of the OVC in a school like Tennessee Tech?
Well, I'm just a big believer in college sports, and I think not only those of us that work on campuses believe in it, but I think the public at large. You know, college athletics is a uniquely American enterprise, and it's so embedded within American culture. I just believe that we're not going to let this suffer. We are going to find ways to modernize it, to bring it into this century, but to keep the traditional core values and the excitement and the school spirit that really separates it as an activity and what it really means. You know, in my view, there's no greater educational experience than to play college sports and to learn those life lessons in a competitive environment like that. And it's part of the educational experience, not just for the athletes, but for everybody on campus. And so it's too important to let it suffer. So I believe it will not only survive, I think it will thrive, but my guess is it's going to look a little different. And some of us may like some of the changes, some of us may not. I'm not sure how that ends up, but I think it's going to survive and do well.
It makes sense, guys. I see why he's now on the NCAA Board of Governors. Yeah. He can do TV commercials. He can do great interviews on radio. I mean, he can do it all. And, oh, by the way, run a university. So, yeah. Good stuff. President Odom, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for talking about some of these things that are currently going on, the current landscape. And best of luck with this. I know it's quite an honor and well-deserved. Thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
You do the same, Phil Odom. He is the president at Tennessee Tech, and we do appreciate him joining. That is really cool. But, man, as he said, there's a lot of challenges right now. There's a lot of things going on. The NIL was quick. We're not used to anything moving quick with the NCAA, right? It's like, okay, we're going to propose this. I think we're going to do it, and we're going to implement it in 2032. So
right.
Hopefully
nothing
we'll have right
fast.
So we can, you know, have 4,000 meetings before we actually do this. So this was actually really, really quick because they didn't have a choice. And so they probably – I like that analogy. We're building the plane on the fly. That's a pretty scary proposition. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Preds. They've got their first home game, first home preseason game on Saturday night against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who they beat last night. But we'll get into a little hockey here on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And we have to ask you about Igor Afanasyev tonight. Two goals in this game and an assist. He had a goal in the second game Sunday in South Florida. What are your impressions of him?
Igor looks really good. As you said, the way he can shoot the puck, he has a knack to score. He's playing a pretty complete game. He's a big guy, works hard, he's tenacious, he's got good skills, he understands how to play. To be very honest with you, I've noticed him in obviously the exhibition games here in Florida and here, but also in practice. Like he's a guy in practice, he catches your eye. If you're doing competitive drills or scoring drills, there's at least three or four times in practice every day you kind of give a double take and it's him. And so he's really making a strong impression.
There you go. Last night, head coach John Hines after the 6-2 victory over the Lightning down in Tampa. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Speaking of that, hey, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Sharks at Bridgestone Arena, that'll be on October 26th. Yes, we're in October, folks, so that's not that far away. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to the game's YouTube page. You'll be entered automatically to win tickets to see the Predators and the Sharks if you just subscribe, if I can say that. Subscribe to 102.5 The Game's YouTube page. That's all you have to do. And then once you do that, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen, and that'll be on this upcoming Monday, October the 4th. So keep that in mind. Speaking of streaming, you can watch us on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Good stuff there. Igor Afanasyev, who I said a lot last night.
Just there you go. I'm so proud of you.
Just to give it to Chase. I mean, I said it. I put, you know, I gave a little extra Afanasyevs last night just for you, Chase. You can ask Ian. Like every time, it was like, that's for you, Chase.
I love it.
He had quite the night. And we had a chance to briefly talk to him in a break at Centennial Sportsplex on Wednesday. I brought this up last night in postgame. The first thing that jumped out at me, one, is his size. He's a lot bigger guy than I thought. I didn't realize he was, you know, like 6'3", 205. He's a big guy. He's a big dude. and he's lively. I love his personality. He came by. Nick Barnowski was nice enough because we were talking about how do you say his last name, and he came by and he told us, and we had a good time with that. But this guy's played in two preseason games, and he's already scored three goals. He had two goals last night. He had a goal, the lone goal in game two, Sunday night down in Sunrise. He really has been standing out. He looks good. I don't think he's going to make the opening night roster, but, man, is he going to make it tough for them? What if he keeps scoring? What if he has two more goals Saturday night?
I like that he's pushing. I still would be surprised if he makes the opening night roster, but I think this is only good news that you have another prospect that looks like he's taking shape and has a chance to be a player for you in time. I love you. You notice exactly what John Hines is looking for in his answer from Pete, and it was basically, I know the guy can shoot, but I like his complete game. You could sense in his answer, I'm watching to see, can I put this guy out there? What is it going to look like in terms of a complete game? He's got the shot. He's got the size. We know that. And that's a really good combination to have. But just like Eli Tolvanen, it's how do you get to where you can get the shot off?
Yeah.
How can you be a winning player for us when you don't have the puck and when you're not shooting? That's really the goal, and that's what player development is about. He's got an interesting background in that he's a Russian that came over.
Yeah,
at an early age.
He's at an early age, and so he speaks the language. He's familiar with the culture. He's familiar with the style of game over here at a young age. And then he goes back over to the KHL and plays against the older guys. So at age 20, he's had a really good variety of experiences.
Yeah.
And I think the last piece is probably to play some games in Milwaukee. But I would not rule him out if he continues to just keep getting better to get to a point where he does come up
at
some point during
the
season.
I think that's what's jumping out at me. This guy, I mean, at least I'll just speak for myself, he's further along than I thought he was. I didn't realize he was this far along. I let me ask you guys this. You know, there's an exciting – look, I'm pro Tomasino. You know me. I've been beating that Tomasino drum. I want to see what it is. But right now, do you think – that Afanasyev is maybe even further along than Tomasino, or no?
I don't know if he's further along at this point, but
I thought it was a given that Tomasino would be ahead of him, and I'm not so sure right now today.
I mean, I get why you're bringing that up, but just because you're seeing more production, you know, early on out of Afanasyev, but I don't know if I would say.
It's
I think
not
in the
just the goals. He had a 3-point game last night.
No,
he was everywhere.
I understand. But, I mean, Tomasino has also been, like, he played in the AHL last year because of how the rules were with COVID. So, I mean, that gives him a leg up.
Maybe.
Overall.
But also, like, how do you weigh that with the KHL? It's a good question because the style of play is so different in the KHL, too. The rink is bigger. The style that you play is different. But I think it also comes down to a question we ask ourselves a lot. In football, what does it mean to excel in the preseason games? For example, last night, it's a great win in Tampa, and you see the roster that Tampa put out there. They did have some of the main guys in there, but largely it's a mix.
Right.
It's a lot of the guys that won't be on the Lightning.
Stamkos, and that was
Stamkos, Killorn,
you know, that's
Chernak. Yeah, they had some guys sprinkled in there, but that's not the real.
There's a guy by the name of Kucherov that wasn't in there.
He's
and
pretty
some
good.
Guy in net. I can't – let's see. What was his name? Vaz something.
Yeah.
That guy in net, he wasn't
the best
in
goalie
there.
In the world?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah. He wasn't in there. So, but still.
But it still means something.
Yes.
Right, to go out there and you got it done. Now, as far as, you know, are you competing with Tomasino for one spot? I'm not sure that's – in a nutshell, exactly what you're looking at, but
they're going to give Tomasino every opportunity. Even if this is, and I'm saying this is my opinion here, not what I know, but I think even if Afanasyev is further along in this camp, so to speak, than Tomasino, Tomasino's still going to make it because they're going to give him every opportunity to succeed at the NHL level. It just at this point in time. It's not a knock towards Afanasyev.
I know, but why is he? They both were drafted the same. I mean, why is he any? I mean, one was a first round pick, one was a second round pick in the same draft. I mean, not separated by too many picks in between. I mean,
I think
Afanasyev was what, the 45th pick overall.
Yeah, second rounder.
Why is Tomasino expected to be any further along than Igor?
I just think the skill set.
I think
you're looking for.
Well, it's hard to know what exactly you need in the skill set. And I think we have to also admit we got to keep watching these guys more.
Sure.
Just to see how it looks as you see them play more. And probably the same is true of the coaching staff. But I think it comes down to something that we know is the case right now with this roster. There's room for somebody like that to make it. If you jump up and grab it, you want it to be based on merit. And so there's a chance for a guy to sneak in there, whereas before, a couple years ago, maybe you didn't have a chance to make a roster out of training camp. It's just too crowded. So what does it mean for a guy like Rocco Grimaldi, too? You know, other guys, or Rem Pitlick, other guys that are fighting to get that last spot or get a spot on the opening night roster. The good thing is the guys are pushing. I think that's the idea that you would like, is the young guys are showing that they're candidates. They want to be considered for a job mm-hmm. on this team. If they weren't pushing, that would make it easier for them to say, oh, man, well, let's just go with the guys we've had before, because this team needs a push from the youth. They want to show that, you know, maybe you don't have to go out and get another veteran at some point.
I'm just saying, Willie, and I know you weren't there. You were doing Gladiator stuff, but I knew seeing him up close and personal, like he was, I was like, dang, I mean, he's a big dude.
The personality, too.
And the personalities. Clearly, I immediately gravitated towards him just because he's got a great personality, man. He is not afraid.
Does he remind you of anybody? Like, I'm sitting there going, he kind of reminds me of a former Predator, but I can't put my finger on it. Just with the personality and, you know, he could be a fan favorite. He already is to the fans that really follow Milwaukee and they follow the prospects and throughout the organization. I mean, he already is. He's been.
Are you going somewhere with that, or do you? Are you just?
No,
you,
I'm asking you.
Okay. Okay.
You've covered. You both have covered the team for a long time. Like, is there anybody that?
I don't. Not with that frame, to be honest. I mean, like I said, he really surprised me. I was like, dang, okay. I mean, I love seeing that because you guys know how I feel. I mean, I want guys that are going to push back. I want guys with some grit to them. I want some guys that don't take any crap. And guys that aren't easy to move off the puck.
Right.
And he doesn't look like a guy that's going to be easy to move off the puck. By the way, he locked 14 and a half minutes last night. He did all that in 14 and a half minutes.
Yeah. I'm excited about him.
That's not bad.
I like what I see. I love what he did last night. We're out there next Friday. If he's mm-hmm. I have a feeling he's still going to be in camp. So if he's still in camp next Friday, we're going to have to get him on, because I think that's a fan favorite in the making right there with this club.
I didn't see the game, Darren. Let's hit on one other aspect. There's several you can try to delve into with any game, like the defense. We haven't gotten into that. Who was out there last night? Ference was in there. Ben Harper was a +3, a guy competing to get in there. But Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, did they play together on the same line?
They did. Now, I'm just, okay, so
that's a thing to watch, right?
Well,
because they had production. Again, put in perspective who they were going against. They weren't going against Sean.
You don't sound excited about that.
No, me?
Yeah.
No, I was just going to admit that, look, I was on, you know, Preds Insiders recently with Ryan Porth, and I said, I have a suspicion. If you're asking me to nail this down, this was obviously a couple of weeks ago, I said, I probably suspect Matt Duchesne will start off centering the second line, and I don't believe that anymore. Like, I feel like that's going to be wrong. Like, I'm going to be wrong with that. Like, I think he's going to probably start with Johansson and Forsberg on that first line. But it looked good last night, but I guess it's not about looking good for a game. It's about
and they looked good.
And I'll say this. It looked good in the first half of the game. I don't know if I'm willing to say that for 60 minutes. It blew me away for 60 minutes. And I know that's probably not fair, because rarely, you know, it's hard to maintain a certain level for 60 minutes in a hockey game. You tend to have, you know, it has its ebbs and flows. I thought the first half, I'll just say they were better the first half than the second half. That's why I did that, because I said on Preds Insiders with Ryan, I was like, I think Matt Duchesne's going to start off the season like that home opener against the Kraken, or season opener, will have Duchesne centering the second line, and I no longer believe that. Could that change? Sure. And could that happen throughout the course of the season? Yeah, but I was talking specifically about starting out, and I don't believe he's going to be centering that second line. I just think that they're going to have him up on that first line with Johansson and Forsberg.
Regardless of where they end up playing, it's you notice how little we're kind of talking about Duchesne and Johansson. It's become kind of a, well, whatever you get from them.
What more is there to say at this point?
There's nothing more. Right. There's nothing new.
That's right? Why the story's been told. John Hines. Right. Yeah. I didn't even ask him when he just – it's like, why? Like, he's been asked that so much. I'm like, how many more times can he address Johansson and Duchesne? So I didn't even bring it up. But Chase, you didn't either.
But the fact remains that if there is a little chip on their shoulder, if you actually do get a little resurgence from them, what could that – I mean, that would mean so much.
Huge.
It would mean so much to this team. It really would. And so I think everybody knows that, but it does bear repeating. If that could be – let's just say they go with that, and that's the first line. If that becomes a legit first line, that's a huge game changer.
It changes a lot of things.
It's a game changer.
How Gill said last night on the broadcast, if this is what they're going to get out of them, if this indeed is what the first line is going to be, and this is what they're going to look like – you know, the Predators are going to have success. You know, they need – I guess what he was saying is they need it to look like this. If they really want to get to where they're going to be, where nobody's really giving them a chance, nobody's really – everybody's kind of counting them out. If they want to be in the mix and prove a lot of people wrong, like, it's got to look like that.
No doubt.
I'll go this –
And we all know we're proceeding with caution because they've been burned by this. But it is out there. It's still a huge opportunity for those two guys. If they can be on their A game, it would be a difference maker.
Even if you get one of them that, you know, is above average, and then one of them that is on their A game and really good, that changes things. But if you get both of them that play to their full potential, not only do I think this is a playoff team, I think they're competing for the Central again. It's a true game changer. I mean, it's because you have a legitimate top line at that point. You're putting Forsberg in a very good opportunity to realize his full potential and be more than a, you know, 27, 28 goal scorer. You know, he could knock on the door of 30 to 35. I'm not going to put 40 on him. You know, he's got to do that before I'm ready to say anything. But then you have Saros that is going to be obviously – getting more opportunity, is now the true starting goaltender. There's no Pekka anymore.
I'll say this too, by the way. We could stop right now on the goalies. I've been impressed with Connor Ingram. I know we had a good conversation with Carl Taylor about him, and there's no doubt he's going to be the workhorse in Milwaukee. But, you know, David Radich, we already know. Like, the backup goalie is no longer a guy that's just going to play on back-to-backs.
No.
Like, that's not the way today's game is set up. Like, David Radich is going to have to play, you know, 20-something games. And if he's not effective, if everything is right with Connor Ingram, I like what I see out of him. I do. I've been impressed with him. I think he's a guy that they would not be afraid at all to throw in that backup role if Radich got hurt or Radich wasn't effective. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Oh, I mean, I think that's what they want him to be.
Had he not had the issues that he had last year, Connor Ingram, I think
– do you think he'd be in this spot already?
I think maybe they would have considered it, but I think
there would be
he would have been
a competition
lot,
for
yes.
backup.
I think Radich right now is clearly going to be the backup, but you love having that guy pushing. You love having Ingram, because I think they've always considered Ingram, when he's got his whole act together, as a guy that can be one of those late blooming, you know, long track goalies. And there's a ton of them in the league that turn into really good goalies, you know, once they hit around 25 years of age. And that's what's tough is, as a goalie, you go through that, and, you know, Chris Mason in our backyard has gone through that process where you have to be patient. You have to be waiting and waiting. You know, you get drafted when you're 18, or you join the pro ranks when you're 18, and sometimes it takes 6-7 years before you ever really get a shot. And Ingram has been like that, but I think he believes he can be an NHL goalie. But I love having three. you love having three guys. Plus, oh, we know about Askarov down the road. You never have too many guys. That we know for certain. Right, I think we want to see Riddick a little bit more, too, and see what he brings to the table. He's had his moments as a starting goalie.
Sure.
He's been a starting goalie in this league.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I've so far, if Connor Ingram and all is right, I think, you know, if they needed him, I don't think they would be afraid. I've been impressed so far. All right, let me tell you, because I know we're kind of – I want to get this in. I want to work this in before we're done with this hour. I'm going to tell you what I think is going to be the most interesting conversation they're going to have behind closed doors. I think that final defenseman, that sixth spot is going to be really, really interesting. So we know Josi and Ekholm, right? We know Carrier and Myers and Fabro, right? Can we all say those five are in there, right? Like
yep.
Opening night against the Kraken, those five are going to be announced. True?
Yep.
We all in agreements?
Yes.
But you've got Matt Benning. You've got Mark Borowiecki, who's back in the mix. You've got David Ferentz, who continues to play well, continues to look good. We know what he's like. He's a very offensive-minded defenseman. You got Jeremy Davies. Jeremy Davies is who I was referring to with that. Jeremy Davies, he's just got to work on other things, but we know what skill set he brings. I mean, he's a guy they would use on the power play. David Ferentz, Howell has said really good things about him. Carl Taylor said some things about him when we talked to him on Wednesday. I just think it's going to be really interesting to see how that final spot shakes out, because there's a lot of worthy candidates,
yes,
I think, for that last spot. And I don't know where they're going. Like, I guess they'll go with the more experienced guy. It seems like last year they leaned on Matt Benning more.
Well, and they like Freddie Allard, too.
Yeah, but I don't think
he's Milwaukee. But
I don't think he's in this mix that I'm talking about. So how do you guys see that last spot shaking out?
You never have too many. That's where you start. There's major questions that we're not going to tackle today on who plays what role in the top five you mentioned. But I see Ferentz as a guy that take the long view. I think he's going to be really good. But give him the chance in Milwaukee to learn and do the things that he hasn't played a lot of time down there. I think he could really benefit from that.
Can I give you a theory on him real quick?
Yeah, because I think he's going to be a good player for a long, long time.
I actually do too.
Because I agree. We all agree on that. I think, and you can't compare one guy to another, but I do think that they look at, you know, Fabro could have benefited from some time in the AHL.
In retrospect,
I think in retrospect, we all agree that Fabro could have benefited from some time in the AHL. And he'd probably tell you that too. I think they're going to look at that situation as a guy that came out of college and right into the league, and they threw Ferentz in there last year. That first game he was in, he looked very lost. And you could just tell that it was very big for him, and he needed some time. So I think they're going to take the cautionary road and not force him into it, because they don't have to, because they're very deep at that position, and acquiring Myers and then the veteran guys like Benning and Borowiecki that they have, they don't have to force him in there. Kind of like they almost had to with Fabro, because they traded PK, and so they wanted to put Fabro in.
They put him
spot
on the fast track. Yeah,
yeah. And hindsight being 2020, he could have benefited from time in the AHL. So I think they're going to do that with Ferentz. I think the future is very bright. I like what I see. He just needs to develop a little bit. To answer your question, I mean, Benning and Borowiecki, I think, are going to make it, and you're probably going to see Borowiecki be the seventh.
I think
maybe those two rotate.
You're going to keep seven.
I liked Benning last year.
You're definitely going to keep seven. And if you don't really like the guy, there's a guy, the eighth guy, maybe you have to put him on waivers. You know, there's that game you have to play sometimes that you might
Could
risk
that be
losing.
Harper?
You might risk losing that.
Oh yeah,
guy.
I left Harper.
Harper's another guy.
I forgot Harper.
Quietly
had a good game last night,
and he played a lot
last
year. So you have really about 10 guys. That
I left
you
him out.
They brought Tennyson in, who's got.
Ben Harper belongs in this. That I meant to bring him up, and I forgot. He had a really good two assists last night. Played almost 20 minutes.
Yeah, but Harper is definitely in the discussion. He always kind of sneaks in there. Last year, it's like, well, you got all these guys hurt. Well, Harper's in there. Like Harper played like 25 games in a row when Ellis and Yosi were hurt at different times. That was valuable experience for him. He's got size. He's limited in what he can do. But on the third pair, you know, a little size. He plays the right side, I think. So that helps him. But
so who's out there against the Kraken?
It's a great question.
I would say
the total X factor to me is Borowiecki, because that's a guy that they brought in with an idea of playing a key role, and then it was sort of a lost season. He got off to a bad start. He couldn't find his groove, and then he got hurt, and he sort of disappeared from the face of the earth. And now he's back with kind of a new trying to do a do over basically. So let's see if he can earn a way into this thing, because he's making substantial money.
Yeah,
he's on a guaranteed deal, so you gotta address it. If he's not in the plans, then you gotta do something with that. It's not the kind of guy you want sitting out all the time.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, you like having an insurance policy, because we all think that Carrier has shown what he can really be, but you know, now everybody knows who he is and everybody knows what he did,
and you gotta do it every night.
He's got to do it every night. So, I think it's certainly a good problem to have. To answer your question, I guess Benning is probably going to be the sixth one that's dressed against the Kraken, and then Borowiecki would be the seventh, is how I would go about it.
You think Harper's eight?
Harper's either eighth or he's in Milwaukee. But they could keep – they've kept eight a lot in the past.
That's the other option you have. You could keep eight. I also don't know at this point. Davies has been a pro long enough. Do you have to put him on waivers at risk losing him?
Because he's what, 24 now?
Yeah, because I lose track of exactly the clock on some of these things. But
he's got to show me a lot more.
I'm telling you, he didn't look bad. He didn't look bad last night.
This is a good problem.
I know. I'm just saying. I think it's really interesting. I think ultimately. It's not going to be Davies, but he belongs in the discussion. It's not going to be Ferentz, but he belongs in the discussion. But trying to figure out who's ultimately going to win out. And throughout the course of a season, you're going to need them all. But I'm saying, just for the sake of this discussion, who actually gets the nod between Benning, Borowiecki, and Harper? I don't know. I really don't know. I'll say this. Philip Myers had a really good night. Led the team in shots with 7. Led the team in block shots with 4. By the way, played the most minutes, too.
Looking forward to seeing more of him. I would imagine they're going to continue to take a good, strong look at him in a lot of these games. I think they want to learn as much about him as they can in this preseason.
All right, we'll come back. Big Joe on the go to get the second hour of Darren Dunnick and Chase started. That's next.